Meg will come and read our scripture.
A reading from Luke chapter 6, 27 through 38. But I say to you who are listening, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who asks of you. And if anyone takes away what is yours, do not ask for it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good, those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive payment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. Instead, love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be the children of the Most High. For he himself is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap, for the measure you give will be the measure you get back. This is the word of the Lord.
This is part of what Luke calls the Sermon on the Plain, comparable to Matthew's Sermon on the Mount, with some different nuances and emphases. And it's a hard teaching. It's challenging. So I guess my first question to you and to me is, do you have enemies? An enemies list? I was raised to think I should not have enemies, that I should be nice and love everybody, and that I shouldn't ever think of somebody else as my enemy. In recent years, I've become more comfortable with my anger and that it has a place. And it doesn't mean I should hate someone, but it's okay to really be mad and deal with those feelings. And recently, I confess, there are names that I could put on my enemies list. I value Jesus' honesty here. There's no denial, no directions, just be nice. Jesus recognized that there are people that feel like enemies. There's those we just don't get along with. We've had an argument, we got into a disagreement. They just think differently or they do things that annoy us. I don't think that really qualifies as enemies, but there certainly are those kind of folks that get under our skin. But there are also people whose words and actions can make them our enemies or enemies of people we care about. They do not care about us. They may even actively be seeking to do things that will harm us or harm people in our circle of concern. Their actions and beliefs and values are against what we believe is good and right. The people Jesus was speaking to knew about those kind of enemies. They were living under a military occupation. They knew a lot about enemies. There were the Roman soldiers, the Roman consuls. There was Herod and the other collaborators who were not Romans but were working with Rome. There were the people, their own people, who became tax collectors for the income and then extracted taxes from them. There were lots of people in their lives out to use them and abuse them who did not care about them and did not treat them with any shred of dignity or respect. And it was in that context to those people that Jesus said, "I say to you, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you." What do we make of that? At the heart of Jesus' teaching, when he was asked, "What is the most important commandment?" what did he say? "Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Both. Both. And so, this, loving your enemies, is central to loving your neighbor as yourself. He goes on to say, if you love those who love you, great. What credit's that to you? Everybody does that. If you do good to those who will do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. If you lend to those knowing you're going to get it back, what credit is that to you? Everyone does that. Do to others as you wish, as you would have them do to you. Now, well, there's sort of the joke there, right? Because there's the people who don't, they would say they're doing to you as you would have them do to you, but it's kind of like, you know, they like chocolate, so they give you chocolate even though you're allergic. I mean, you know, it's not that kind of do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's the serious kind. It's like, stop and think about, what do I really want from others? I want to be treated with respect. I want to be acknowledged for who I am. I want to be valued for my individualism, for my concerns, and I want others to treat me in that same way. This is Jesus' ethics. This is the way we are called to treat absolutely everyone. Not reciprocity, not I know I'm going to get it back. Not tit for tat, not quid pro quo. We know about reciprocity, right? The way I always know I know it, and somehow it's baked into us, is if someone gives you a gift and you didn't have one for them, and you go, "Ooh, I got to go get them a gift." That's reciprocity. That's the assumption that it's got to be equal. It's got to go back and forth, right? No, Jesus said, that's not the way it works. And certainly you don't give expecting. No, not expecting, not looking for that. Jesus was about creating a whole new kind of community. He called it the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven. Martin Luther King Jr. called it the beloved community. It is a new realm of God being made real here, a community of love and mercy, not of credit, not about getting and giving what we deserve or what we earn. And this realm, this community, is possible because of who God is. Not because of who we are. Because of God's overflowing grace and mercy, we can act differently. Because of God's abundance, God's generosity, we're set free from a system of rewards and punishments. It's not about grades. It's not about comparisons. It's not about competition. We can trust the love of God. God loves us exactly as we are. God knows us better than any human being. God is here to care for us, to guide us, to be with us. God supplies our needs. So we can choose love rather than fear. A couple commentators I read tried to claim that this was Aramaic hyperbole. hyperbole, exaggeration, that Jesus was trying to make his point by exaggerating. I totally disagree. Thanks to great, great people like Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and all those who have followed and lived out their teachings, we know that these teachings of Jesus are a livable strategy for dealing with enemies, a way that actually can work to deal with oppression and injustice. Turn the other cheek. Give not your coat, but your shirt as well. A lot of us have balked. Sounds kind of like you're supposed to be a doormat, be a wimp. It's interesting because one thing I read actually said, if the reason you turn the other cheek is because you're scared, don't do it. That's not what this is about. So Walter Wink, in his book, Jesus and Nonviolence, A Third Way, which we've ordered a number of and we're recommending to be our Lenten book that we will read together and discuss in adult ed over several sessions. Wink talks about the cultural context of this. You may have heard me talk about this before or read it somewhere else, but the idea being, in Matthew's version, Jesus actually says, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other one. So this was culture, like Bangladesh culture I grew up in, is a right-handed culture, first century Palestine. You did not use your left hand to do anything. Well, you did do it for something, but it wasn't something you touched someone else with. Your left hand was for bathroom. Your right hand was for any interaction with another human being or for taking things or for food or any of those things. Left-handed people have a really hard time in those kind of cultures, but they exist still today. So, in that culture, if you struck somebody on the right cheek, the implication was that you were slapping them with the back of your hand. It's what you did to a child, to a slave, to a servant. A husband might even do it to his wife. To knock them back in line, to remind them of their place. So Jesus says to these people who would have been the ones getting slapped, those people listening to him, if someone does that to you, turn the other cheek. If they hit you again, they got to hit you with this side of their hand. And in that culture, that was a whole different thing. That was the way you hit somebody in a fight that was your equal, or maybe punched them. But the point is, it's a different kind of hitting. So this is not saying, just let somebody run you over, let somebody abuse you. It's saying, this is a nonviolent way to call out the injustice, to make the other person have to recognize that they're humiliating you, and make a choice. What are they going to do next? In the same way, in that day, if you were poor and in debt, needing to borrow more, or if you needed money, you would have to give your coat as a guarantee that you were going to give the money back. But the teaching was that in a village kind of situation, if it was cold at night and you were so poor that you didn't have anything, they were supposed to let you have your coat back at nighttime to sleep in, and then you have to give it back to them the next day. But if your debt had gotten to the point that the person takes you to court and says, I'm taking your coat and I'm keeping it because you just don't pay, you're not paying me back because you're so poor, because the system's so unjust, then Jesus said, take off your shirt as well. Strip down to your skibbies or maybe go start naked. Again, in that culture, to be naked puts shame on the person looking at you. It's saying, okay, you're going to take things. Okay, take everything I got. That's what you're doing anyway. Here, I'll show the whole world you've taken everything. This is not a mamby-pamby, I'm going to let you run over me. It's creative nonviolence. It's a transforming initiative. It's doing something that calls out the injustice in a nonviolent way. It's the brilliance of Mahatma Gandhi's leadership in India, of Dr. King and others' leadership during the civil rights movement. Sit-ins, boycotts, marches were not just, let's call attention, they were to highlight the injustice. The point of nonviolent direct action is to call attention to what is wrong in a way that is not violent, in a way that is not hate-filled. Jesus, Wink says, suggests amplifying an injustice in order to expose the fundamental wrongness of legalized oppression. Jesus' teaching is a sort of moral jujutsu, a martial art for using the momentum of evil to throw it off balance. But he did not advocate nonviolence as a technique for outwitting the enemy, but as a means of opposing the enemy in such a way as to hold open the possibility of the enemy becoming just, of the enemy being changed. That is the way of Jesus. That is the way of Dr. King and the civil rights movement. Those moves, those strategies they used were meant to empower the oppressed and to bring to light the injustice involved, to heighten awareness, and to make society better for everyone. King says it over and over again. The white man needs to realize, the white folks need to realize, this is for them too. Racism hurts everyone. This is for everybody. I think it's also important for us to name that although the civil rights movement worked hard, they trained, they prayed, they studied, they sang, they practiced to be ready to be nonviolent, to be ready to take it, to be spit on and cursed at and yelled at and knocked down and kicked and not fight back. And what they brought to light was the violence of the injustice, the violence of racism. So when Bull Connor and his police dogs and fire hoses turned on those people, those young people in Birmingham. They shocked many white people across the nation into finally paying attention and saying it's wrong. Black Americans were not shocked. It wasn't news to them. They knew. But as Dr. King said over and over and over again, the purpose of these provocative actions was not just to end the injustice. It was to focus on the system, change the system, but to work to convert those who were supporting the system. You know that famous quote, "Returning hate for hate multiplies hate, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars." Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Hate multiplies hate. Violence multiplies violence. Toughness multiplies toughness in a descending spiral of destruction. So when Jesus says, "Love your enemies," he is setting forth a profound and ultimately inescapable admonition. I've been wrestling with this a lot this week. What is the third way? What is the Jesus way for us in our country right now? Josie mentioned coming up on Friday this economic boycott that's being called for, to boycott all things financial. Banking, transactions online, businesses. If you have to go to the store, to go to somebody local, totally local, and try to pay cash. But then Leslie, I saw, had put on Facebook another effort that's kind of being added on top of that, which I love, which is saying don't just boycott. Do something loving and caring in your community on February 28th. Do something to show kindness and care. So that got me thinking about random acts of kindness to our neighbors, including the ones I don't like. I think I've mentioned one of them. There's an older guy up the street that sort of drives us crazy. And then there's the people across the way who decided, who put up several Trump signs that are still there, including the one with the raised fist if the bullets just passed us. And I see them every day when I walk my dogs. So what if this week I baked cookies for everybody in the neighborhood, including the ones I don't like? How do we take small acts to build bridges, to forge relationships, to try to open communication? And what are the ways we can be in solidarity with people who are being targeted? I was in a couple conversations this week as trying to kind of reconnect to my connections to Ithaca College's Office of Religious and Spiritual Life, learning that as a private college, they're working hard to try to make sure they protect their LGBTQ plus students, faculty, and staff. But they're also, under legal advice, taking more of their internal publicity internal. They're scrubbing the public stuff that's out there for anybody in the world to see about many of their programs. They're changing language about their NLK Scholars program and what's being put out. There is a lot of fear right now. There's a lot of legitimate concern right now. How do we join in solidarity? How do we take some kind of a stand? So I told Ann Farrell, I'm kind of thinking I'd like a bumper sticker or a sign. Maybe it's individuals, maybe we do as a church. It's a little more complicated if we do it as a whole church. That says, as a follower of Jesus Christ, we celebrate diversity. We work for equity. And we practice inclusion. I think we got to find ways to say that's not who we are. That's not what the Church of Jesus Christ, you don't get to define what Jesus is for me, what Jesus teaches to me, and how I live that out. So what are the ways that we can find creative little steps, at least, to take a stand, to speak out, to stand with? I don't know, but it strikes me about Jesus, it's creative, it's provocative, it's not fearful. So I think that's a challenge for us to think about. What can we do as individuals? What can we do as a community in these challenging times? To practice love for our enemies, to practice doing good to those who we know don't believe and think like we do right now, and to be in solidarity with those most targeted and afraid. Jesus' love is not a feeling. It's not an emotion. It's action. It's practice. And it's not something we wake up tomorrow and think, okay, I'm just going to love everybody. It is the work of a lifetime to allow the love of God to transform our loving, transform our relating, to make of us the people Jesus calls us to be. But that's what we're called to do. To be transformed by God's love and to embody it, to be Christ's hands and feet in this incredibly troubled world we're in right now.